Well, welcome to the month of November. As a matter of fact, today is November the 4th, 2021. From the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, this is PJ, your internet pastor. That's right, fully retired, but greatly desired. The Duke, Ellington, take the A-Train. Ellington and his fantastic band, Take the A-Train. Thank you for joining me on this great, 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 wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Thursday afternoon. That's right. No, it's still Thursday morning here in Los Angeles. Not a cloud in the sky over L.A. The sun is out. It's shining good. I'm going to walk my dog, or should I say my dog is going to walk me. Ha ha! But I'm happy to be here. And welcome into the month of November. God's blessings to many of you that has lost loved ones. As a matter of fact, I have to attend a homegoing ceremony at the Angelus Funeral Home on Saturday morning here in Los Angeles. And a dear friend of mine, his dad passed away. He was 84 years young. And I'm going to celebrate that life with my friend and his family and other friends of mine. But I'm hoping that it'll be a wonderful occasion for us to remember. Remembering my family in prayer. I had to go in for a medical thing. I won't go into the details of it, but it was successful, and I'm praying that it'll remain successful as we go through our daily trials and tribulations. And wow, what trials and tribulations. You know, I've learned a lot of lessons since the last time I was sitting at the big mic talking to you. An awful lot of lessons about life, learning about life, learning about people, enjoying people the way I ought to enjoy them, and allowing them to enjoy my presence at the same time. It's just a wonderful thing to be alive today and to be able to discuss those wonderful, wonderful ongoings with other human beings. Thank you for coming to the website. Thank you for taking the time coming to the website. And because you didn't have to, you could have been doing something different. But I'm going to continue to play some Ellington for you right now. So let me look and see what I got up next on this thing. And what's the matter with playing some good Ellington? Here's a nice number, and it's called After All. Just listen to the instruments in this piece. Magnificent. That's why I love listening to the old stuff. My brother just called me on the phone, and we were talking about the music that Daddy and Mommy used to play when we were kids growing up. And the cartoons that we watched, Betty Boop, Bosco, stuff like that. Duke Ellington and his orchestra in the background. Here's a number called After All. Duke! There's nothing like the Duke. There is no one like the Duke. I believe, in my estimate, he is the greatest of all African-American jazz players. Yes, he tops Louis Armstrong, Charlie Parker. Yes, he tops Billie Holiday, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis. And his son, Mercer Ellington, just as brilliant as his daddy. Daddy, Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington was an American composer, pianist, and leader of a jazz orchestra from 1923 through the rest of his entire life. Born in Washington, D.C., D.C. Ellington was based in New York City, but in the mid-20s, he gained national profile through the orchestra's appearance at the famous Harlem Cotton Club. Oh, now that was a place that black people were not allowed to go and hear Duke play. White people did, but black people weren't allowed. Can you believe it? You had an all-black orchestra and black people couldn't even go in with the white people in there to listen to the famous black man playing. Oh, my goodness. What a marvelous time that had to be. Some of the jazz musicians who were members of Ellington's orchestra, such as the saxophonist Johnny Hodges, are considered among the best players in the idiom of jazz. Ellington melded them into the best recorded orchestral unit in the history of jazz. And see, and I have all the music right here in front of me, and I can play it, and that's what I'm going to do. Look, cheer up. COVID is about done, but if it comes back, you know, I don't know who put it out there. The Chinese, the whiteys, the Pekingese. I'm not trying to be a racist or nothing, but I survived it. Y'all survived it. Let's listen to this next number. It's one called Dear Old Southland. Here Duke takes this number, and he really makes you feel like you in the South when you're listening to this. Up a southern conversation going on. The piano, the way he does the music, is so cool because I'm down south. I hear my grandparents talking, my auntie and my uncles fussing in the background over a bottle of wine. I remember that. And the Duke brings it all back. I remember sitting next to my daddy when I was 9 and 10 years old. My daddy was at the piano, and the Duke was the champion, and my daddy would try to play these chords. I remember them when I was a kid. And now I'm 77, and I'm saying, Daddy's sitting next to me all over again as I hear the Duke. Dear old Southland. And you hear the kind of scratchy on the record, right? Because it's a 78. Those of you that don't know what a 78 is, that's a 78 grade needle playing on a glass disc. Boy, I love having that Southern conversation with you guys. Hey, this is PJ. You've come to my website, and here it is on this beautiful, beautiful day of Thursday, November the 4th, 2021, in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. Thank you for joining, PJ. Hey, you see that picture on the website? That is me when I was staying. Oh, my God. I gotta get a record that bespeaks this condition. Oh, yes. You know, I'm going to have some fun with you guys. You guys want to know what was buzzing around in my head when that picture was taken? That was Christmas Day in Seoul, Korea. I was in the Army. It was 1968 around that time. You will notice that on my sleeve, there are no insignias of rank because I had just gotten out of the military stockade from being in there for 20 days. I was fined a 30-day stay in the military stockade in Seoul, Korea for insubordination to a non-commissioned officer. The non-commissioned officer was a Sergeant Rush, whom I cursed out. And that cost me all of my stripes because the racist bigot tried to put me down and I let him know that I'm not Charlie's clown. That was the customary deal. Now, we were in the 304 Signal Battalion, but if you look at the picture closely, because that's what I want you to do, to look at the picture closely, and I'm going to try to keep this picture attached to this particular webcast and so that you can get a frame of reference of 18 minutes into this, where I was back in the day and what was going through my head. Well, I'm going to play this next number and you will know the hit of the day. And I mean the hit that ran the day. What were they playing? You know Mary well.
Nothing you can say can tear me away from my God. Nothing you can do, cause I'm stuck like glue to my God.
Listen.
I'm sticking to my God like a snake.
Thank you. Take me away from my God. Mary, well said again, girl. That's it. That's the way I felt about myself back then when that picture was taken. Because about a year after that, I married Lucy. And see, I told her, I'm your guy. I'm your dude, girl. That's where I felt. I was determined back there, boy. Hey, for those of you that believe in giving up, I don't believe in that. I just don't believe in that. That's Mary Wells from the Motown Collection. Ooh, my guy. And the counterpart of that was My Girl. Hey, I got sunshine on a cloudy day. Let me see if I can find that in my mix here, because I think that that goes right along well with what I want to share. Yeah. You know, you cannot play My Guy by Mary Wells without thinking about the Temptations singing about his girl. And it starts off with this dude on a guitar, got to be plucking it with his right thumb. To listen to the string section. That's the way I felt when I married Lucy. I mean, wow. I mean, I can't talk about it enough on my website here. And the older I get, you know, and this, you brothers and sisters, I want to talk with you so that you can possibly get into this mindset. Lucy is alive and here with me. I am setting in the Lucy Coleman studio. I mean, her spirit embodies joy and femininity in this house. She was the woman of the house. I recall when she passed away, some of my friends asked me, well, are you going to sell the house? You know, a lot of people do that. A young man that I know recently, his wife passed away, just like mine did. His wife reminded me a lot of my wife because, and we, me and the man used to discuss this, how our wives were so similar. Well, his wife passed away too. And instead of him staying in the house like I did, he got rid of the house almost immediately. I can't even contact him. I don't know how to contact him, but completely different. I stayed here because I want her spirit to come back here and to remind me how beautiful females can be, because I'm hard on females. I've always been very hard on females. And the reason that I'm especially difficult, and especially for the African-American female, is the way they treat African-American males. Let me say this. I know a lot of males that are still crazy over females, but they're not crazy about the way the female's disposition is and the way their body looks. Now, I got to go all the way back. I'm zipping back in time. Now, you see that picture of me that I'm leaving hooked on to this thing, and so that you can understand, because the picture made me think about it. Look at that look on my face. I had just gotten out of military jail for cussing a white boy out. And I was gaining a lot of weight. We was drinking a lot of beer there because I was a radio teletype operator in the 304th Signal Battalion. And those brothers sitting around the table with me, this was our Christmas dinner. And they just let me out of the stockade for Christmas. Because I was an ideal prisoner. I was supposed to be in there 30 days. But they had a new recruit of white soldiers coming into the 304 Signal Battalion, white soldiers who had parents of prominence, because the reason that they let me out of, listen to the story, it's all in that picture that you're looking at. The reason they let me out of the stockade is because I was a chief radio teletype operator and they needed me to train these white soldiers who didn't go to radio school. During that time, America was drafting everybody and sending their children over to Vietnam to be blown up. And so the reason that I have that expression on my face, you're talking about white privilege. You're not going to believe the story that I'm going to tell you. And I hope that you can keep looking in the face of a black man as he looks back at you as I explain why I look like that. I don't know who took the picture of me, but had to be another black brother or somebody that I asked to take a Christmas picture of me. And you see each black man with a different facial expression, because they're going through what they're going through, and I'm going through in my mind, I be damned. I got sent to jail for 30 days because a white sergeant was mistreating me, and I spoke up to him, spoke back to him, this Sergeant Rush. He was about 4 feet 10. That was his height. He looked like he had crawled from under a rock but he had rockers on his sergeant thing, and the word was from the other brothers in the battalion that he was sent there because some brothers had threatened to kill him in his last place that he was stationed. I mean, the brothers must have been from Chicago or something. You see, I was a little punk-ass fool from Los Angeles and didn't know how to really go through shit. Oh, I'm sorry for using that kind of language, but I'm being real with you. I'm sitting in this chair now, and I seemingly was overweight because I darn sure don't weigh that now, nor look that well. But the expression on my face was I lost my stripes because I was just going to make sergeant at that time. And I lost all my stripes, and I just got out the military stockade for speaking up for my rights. I didn't steal nothing. I didn't hit nobody. I didn't rape nobody. I was black, and I was a soldier. And this dude, if you can call him a dude, when he first landed at the 304th Signal Battalion, I had just gotten off of a truck. Coming from a field problem up in Busan, Korea, when I met this Sergeant Rush. I wonder if he's still alive. If anybody hears this podcast over time, his name was Rush. I didn't take a picture of him because I wouldn't waste a camera slide. I have hundreds of slides of me when I was in the Army. But no, I did not take a picture of him. I don't want a picture of him in my mind. He cost me my going up, you know? That look on my face right there was because I had just gotten out of jail, framed for something by a white man that I didn't do because I was getting ready to promote up to sergeant of 3 stripes, and I would have been, because I was a smart Negro, I would have had my own truck, my own rig, and that white boy got me mad and had me perform an insubordination to him as a non-commissioned officer. And my lieutenant, which was white and everything else, he looked at me, and I remember when I was standing before the lieutenant, before they sent me to the stockade, and the lieutenant just looked at me. It's like he wanted to grab me. I was much thinner than that. But that fat is from eating that stockade food because I worked in the kitchen. I didn't do nothing wrong to be in prison. Though I never been in a civilian jail here in Los Angeles and stuff, but I had to go all the way overseas. So that's why I had that expression on my face. Wish yourself a merry, merry Christmas. And those were two of the songs that were floating through my head at the time. All right, I'm going to play this next number here. And this is the way, because this was a very popular song. And Stevie Wonder jumped on this. And maybe this will take the expression off of my face. I'm going to play Blowing in the Wind, as sung by Stevie Wonder. Now, you may wonder who wrote it. Robert Dylan, or Bob Dylan, is an American singer, songwriter, and author, and a visual artist, often regarded as one of the greatest songwriters of all time. Dylan has been a major figure in the very popular culture during his career spanning for 60 years. Much of it was a celebrated work dates back in the 60s. And let me say this, That's when I was at my prime. It was in 1965 that I was drafted into the Army. When such of the songs as that I'm going to play, Blowing in the Wind, and The Times They're A-Changin', because anthems for the civil rights and anti-war movements were being just taken over. And I find this interesting because Bob Dylan was born May 24th, 1941, so he's about 3 years older than I am, but I understand where the song came from because that's what I was feeling. Now listen to Stevie Wonder give his rendition of Blowing in the Wind, and look at my face. I'm going to do this. It just came into my mind. And see, I'm listening to this with my headsets on because I'm in the studio and I'm producing this presentation. And I got the volume almost as high as it can go coming in my head. So every word that Stevie just said, that's why if I play music, I want you guys to get a good set of headphones because I'm still working and jerking this Logic Pro X system, trying to get the best sound that I can as I spin these numbers on my website for you for the rest of my life. Now, since most of you know that this website got started as a Christian website, my values towards other human beings are Christians. Live and let live. do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And let me put this in there. Some people you can look at and you know, just like when I don't want to remember Sergeant Rush. I don't want to do that. But that expression on my face, I haven't looked like that for years. And I married after I got out of the Army, and Lucy and Leslie and Delia brought those smiles on my face. The people that I pastored in the church when I pastored, they brought smiles on my face. The families, let me go down that. Let me see if I can remember. The Frost family, Queen Esther and James Frost. Oh, my gosh. They adopted a little baby named Tracy. Yeah. Queen Esther was barren. Another family, the Moaning family. The Moaning family. And I find this very interesting because as it stands now, I have communication with Clifford Moaning Jr. See, Clifford Moaning, the original, owned Moaning's Automotive on 52nd and Central Avenue in Los Angeles, California. And Richard Moaning's son, Clifford Moaning's son, who is Richard, worked at the shop. Well, it's his son, the son of Honey and Richard, that I'm communicating with you just a few weeks ago on Facebook. And to see the picture of his children and his grandchildren, you have to know how wonderful that makes me feel. How wonderful. There's still a man I want to see. I haven't seen him since the late 90s, and it's my fault. I'm just going to get in my car and drive over to his business, because he's the nearest thing living to Clifford Moaning than the Clifford Moaning Jr. That family, the Moaning family, what a family. I was a pastor of a church, and every Christmas, every Easter, I would leave my family and my home and go over to Clifford and Hazel Moaning's home to bless their Thanksgiving table or their Christian table. And then I'd come home and do the services in mine. Now, that was wrong on my behalf, because I should have put my family first, even on Christmas and Easter, but I didn't. I visited other family members. I was one of those cosmopolitan pastors, people. I was serious. I was serious. If I had members, as a matter of fact, I remember telling Lucy one day, I said, that's how I make my living, baby. Because if these people stop putting some ducats in the plate, well, that's going to speak to you when you want to go to the mall with your babies and go shopping. So stop knocking. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for coming by my side. I really do appreciate you. And I'm going to continue to play some music now and stop chatting on. The music that formed my frame of reference, I keep saying that on many of the webcasts. Stevie Wonder knows how to hit the nail right on the head. Heaven help us.
Bombs begin to fall. Yeah. black man if he struggles one more day. Never help a white man if he turns back away. Never help a man who kicks the man who has a call.
That's Steve Lynn Hardaway Morris. That's right. Stevie Wonder. He was born May 13th in the year 1950. Now, that's interesting because I was already on my way, known professionally as Stevie Wonder. He's an American singer, songwriter, musician, record producer. Wonder is credited as a pioneer and influence to musicians. And I might add to Wikipedia, musicians from all over the world, across genres such as rhythm and blues, pop, soul, gospel, funk, jazz. A virtual one-man band, his use of synthesizers, which came later in his career, and the electric musical instrument during the 1970s. Isn't it something how a black man who was born in poverty and came in contact with a man named Berry Gordy Jr. Is instrumental in doing all these wonderful things and causing me to set in the Lucy Coleman studio and play his music and remember when he did Fingertips. I have it right there, but I'm not going to play it. Thank you for coming to my website. Hey, listen. If you've appreciated this chapter, because that's all this picture is just another chapter of the book of my life, let me know it. Just share this website with your friends. You know, a friend of mine wanted me to get into a TikTok thing and a Twitter deal. I don't want to do that. I don't want all these ID tags. I want people to remember me by my name, johnecoleman.org. Tell your friends about it and just say, you know, just say, hey, man, check out what this cat is saying. This cat is right now 70. Shoo, I'll be 78 on February the 8th. Can you believe that? That's right around the corner. And the years are just flopping up on me. So as I continue to put these You know, I try to make it an hour every time I do it because you know how it is. I get lazy like everybody else does. But it's time for one more song. I want to end up with who I started with, Duke Ellington and his fantastic band. Let's go back. Why do I love being an African American? Why do I love my culture so much? Why do I love every time I see pictures of my brothers and sisters? We're each wearing our hair differently. We wear the styles that we feel we are. We're always in style, never out of style. We are so diverse because we are the species from which all the other species derived. So full of wonderful melanin flowing through our veins and through our hearts. Yes, we as African Americans. Duke Ellington wrote this number called Black and Tan Fantasy. Can you believe it? Glad that you could spend this hour with me, and I hope that I've been able to cheer up your day. As I shared a little bit about my past life and my present life, and let me say this to those of you that I will probably never speak to or come in contact with. I think that life is the most beautiful gift that God has ever given us. And I think that it is best received from God when you live your life to the fullest at the glory of God. And what I mean by God is ultimate createness. Everything that I see is a manifestation of something wonderful in my life. Even if a volcano were right under me, the manifestation of it would heat me up so quick, I'd just be gone that quick, because lava burns to the bone. But you see, the existence itself of everything is God. And I thank God for that. I thank God that I'm able to communicate it, to talk about it, to give vent or to give glory to God. What we do is, when we have our own private religions, that's why religions turn into cults, because you become cultic behind what you believe. You know, and I've never thought in my mind that everybody should believe the way I believe. Let me tell you a quick story. I was doing some research on Biola University, especially when they were in downtown Los Angeles, right next to where the city library is. I was doing some research on that, and I said, my God, I'm looking at all the old pictures and everything. I said, didn't they have people of color learn about God? And then it dawned on me. And this I did while I was a student of theology in the seminary. I'd look at this thing and I'd say, where are the black people? Where are the people of color? Where? And see, when the white man went to these foreign countries, what he did is he took his religion with him and he went into these foreign lands way off, even in the Pacific and in Africa, wherever he went, he took his religion with him. And with that religion, he had with him a musket, a gun, a projectile, modern weaponry. And he goes into the parts of the world where these people have just discovered what a digging hole is. And you go over there and you have your musket and your blades and your Bible and your religion, and then you share that story with them, and then you have them bowing down to a figurative thing looking like you, of all people, nothing like them. Don't dress like them. And that's why you wouldn't let the natives dress in the clothes that they were going to dress in. You told them to put on some clothes. You didn't want them native boys walking around with their Jocelyn hanging out and everything. So put on some pants and everything. And what happened? Pants had fleas in it. Fleas from Europe. Fleas from the Portuguese, from the Spaniards, from the other Europeans, and from the Germans that came across and went into those Polynesian islands, bit them people, gave them diseases. They were doing well without you, but you left that Bible there, didn't you? And then you raped them of all of the resources that they ever put together and took it back and built great monuments to your life. That's why when you go to Amsterdam, Sweden, and you go where they had king this and king that, all these castles and all these monuments to the treasures that you plundered. Oh, I know my world history. You left that Bible there, but you took all the resources. And here we are. Thank you for coming to my website. This is PJ saying I love you, and I'm praying for you.